Welcome to episode 31 of the Worship Drummer Podcast. This is John Manna, your host. You are part of a global group of Christian drummers who are continually striving to put the heart before beat. Why? Because we believe that worship is about the work of your hands and heart. Follow along online at worshipdrummer.com, or you can always hit me up on Instagram at worshipdrummer. Thanks for listening and enjoy this episode. Well, what's up, Worship Drummer fam? I hope that you are doing well in this crazy year, 2020. And we're almost to the end. And I heard it said this way that someone said it, they're not going to wait up to celebrate 2021 on New Year's Eve. They're going to stay awake to make sure that 2020 leaves. And maybe you feel like that. Hopefully this episode will bring you some cheer. And I'm excited to bring you this conversation with Andrew Pica. He works for Loop Community, and he is actually the guy who developed TrackRig. And so maybe you use that at your church for your multi-tracks, but you're going to hear a lot about it, about why he invented it, and I think it's so cool and fascinating. But a little disclaimer as we jump in, this conversation was actually recorded just before COVID hit. And then literally, I'm a lead pastor, our church had to make a hard pivot to online only. And so I'm just coming out of that hole as our church has reopened for the last couple of months, and now just getting back to a more normal routine. We also moved just about a week and a half ago, so we're in a new house with my wife and kids. So a lot's gone on, and from the Worship Drummer world, I'm excited to also just put a little plug that worshipdrumsamples.com is going to be launching early on in the new year. It's taken a little longer than what we wanted to originally, but I'm excited. I feel like we have the right pieces in the right places, and I'm so stoked for you to be able to hear some of the samples that we're making. The heart behind that project is to remove the fuss of trying to find the right sound for the right song or the right samples for the songs that you would play on a Sunday, and just to give them straight up to you, like, hey, here's the tambo that you would use for this song. Here's the snare that you would use, or the claps or the clicks or whatever that would be. So we're really gunning to make it simple, that if you have a song on your set list, you could just head to worshipdrumsamples.com when we launch, and you'll be able to find what you're looking for. And I'm going to be announcing more in the coming weeks and months as we get closer to it, but stay tuned. But listen, I don't want to take any more time than I need to, other than to say that this is a fascinating episode as well. If you're entrepreneurial in nature, or maybe you have like a lot of ideas, I would say listen closely to what Andrew says, because he took an idea and made it a reality. And so I really believe that if you're that kind of creative person who's wired with a bunch of ideas, but then you need to actually, you know, take a step and begin to create or produce or whatever that looks like, I really think that you're going to be encouraged by what Andrew has to say. So without further ado, the long-awaited next episode of the Worship Drummer Podcast is here, and here's my conversation with Andrew Pica. We're so happy and honored to have with us today Andrew Pica. So Andrew, welcome to the show, man.
All right, thanks. I'm excited to be here, really excited. This is a cool little treat for me.
It is, and for me too. For those of you who don't know, I'm just going to give you the skinny now. Currently, and you correct me if I don't get this right, but Andrew, you are the responsible for product development at Loop Community.
Yep, that's a big part of what I do there.
which is really cool. And we're going to get to that in this episode. But first and foremost, for every other person listening to this, we want to know, are you a drummer? And what you know, what you got in that department? So kind of just give us a brief history of, or introduction, I should say, of who you are and kind of how you got your feet into the music world. And we'd love to know the stories of origin on this podcast.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah, we need to make sure people don't just like check out product development. I thought this was a drummer podcast. Yeah.
Yeah.
Disclaimer, I am a drummer. I have been doing that for a while, and that has been and is my livelihood right now in Nashville. I've been doing it for, well, I mean, I started back in fourth grade where they gave you the little drum pad or whatever. And then I did like the whole concert symphonic band, public school in the suburbs outside of Chicago is where I grew up, did that whole thing. And music was something I just loved to do. So I continued on to do it in college. I went out, shipped out from Chicago to Boston. I went to Berklee College of Dudes. I mean, sorry, music. That's we used to say that while we were there, but Berklee College of Music, and where I studied, I actually studied music production and engineering is what my degree is in, but I was a drum set principal there. Everyone has a principal instrument when you get in and taking lessons and ear training and stuff. But towards your last year, you kind of go and veer off to whatever your major is a little bit more. But so yeah, I went to Berklee and did the whole engineering, audio engineering track. And right before I graduated, I had this whole, so I think I shared a little bit of the story with you, but I had this whole like crazy shift in what I thought I was going to be doing with my life. I thought I was going to get into the studio world and learn how to make records and do all that. And God kind of just really put this new passion or redirection in my life where he's like, I actually think you're going to do this. And it was, he reinstilled this passion of just playing drums in a worship setting and leading people in that. And it happened, I won't go into the whole story, but it happened 2 months before I was going to walk across the stage. And I still remember calling my parents and just unloading the news that I was like, you know, this thing I've studied 4 years to do, like recording, I think I'm actually going to go try to play live and like play drums again. And I'm super blessed to have incredibly supportive parents. And they encouraged me. They're like, if God is leading you towards it, you need to do that and pursue it. So, yeah, so graduate. Again, a lot of crazy, awesome moments happen, but I end up getting in touch with this. So in the suburbs of Boston, there was this little worship band, these three dudes that God had been blessing their ministry. And I come into contact with them through a random gig. I end up running into them and they're like, hey, we're going to try doing this thing full time for a little bit. We're actually going to leave our jobs and kind of say yes to everything that gets put in front of us, whether it's camps or conferences or leading worship at Sunday morning worship gatherings or whatever, and just see where God takes it. And we're all doing that, but our drummer can't. He just got married and like he can't commit to that. And so here I was, like a 22-year-old just out of college, like this gets put in front of me. I was like, this sounds like a gift from God right here. I was like, I'm in, sign me up. And so that ended up being what I did for 3 years right out of college. I played, we toured around New England primarily, like Maine, Massachusetts, Vermont, all that. Wow. And made very little money and we were roughing it for sure. But I had the time of my life. Like it was, I was learning how to play live, and that's where, well, I'm sure we'll move into this, but that was the beginnings of getting started with backing tracks and starting to learn to play and create backing tracks. It's where I first learned about Loop Community and heard about them. And, but yeah, it was just the four of us bumming around doing, we brought a PA with us. We would set that thing up for anyone that would give us a shot. And, but God blessed it, and he increased our our ministry and our reach, and we started playing farther and farther outside New England. And I mean, there's a lot of stuff that went into that, but yeah, it was just the four of us, and we started having more opportunities that were farther away. And I'm sure you know this, being up there in the north, is like, when you start getting opportunities in Florida and Alabama and stuff, it becomes, you have to drive 10 hours just to get out of New England, let alone play right. anywhere else. Like, you're not, there's a reason why Nashville is the touring center of America, or one of them, is because it's so centrally located, and you can tour, I forgot what the statistic is, but like in 8 hours, you can get to so many major cities. And so we started to feel that pressure a lot more of like, if you wanted to do a run of shows, we were just gone for so long. And that's really hard when the other guys have families and everything. So we started to feel that pressure of like, maybe we need to relocate. Maybe that's something we need to do. And so eventually I was ready to move. I was like, I'm at that point, you know, I was like 23 or 24. And I'm just getting so antsy of like, I love New England. The piece of my heart's up there. I have a lot of friends up there, but like, there's not a touring culture up there. There's not a community of,
right.
And especially Christian music. Like, we were on an island for sure. And I felt like I was on an island, like talking to friends up there, like no one does what I do. So like, I have conversations and no one, it's really hard to relate to people. And I have the opposite schedule as everyone else. I'm gone on the weekends. And so it was like, I just felt like I was spinning my wheels at a certain point. Like, I'm ready to like get out there. I want to go like someplace where people do what I do. And so we had recorded a couple albums in Nashville, and we started to see that as the kind of the place where, obviously, we were learning that Christian music, a lot of it is based out of there. And there's a lot of connections there, a lot of relationships there that we started to develop. So it seemed like that started to be the place that we were starting to move towards. And the long story short is we end up taking the plunge, and three out of the four of us moved down there. And that ended up being the end of that worship group as it was, because God kind of revealed through that time that like the leader of our band at the time, he has strong roots in New England, and he's from there, and is really involved in the church, Big C Church in New England, and just felt a deeper calling to continue that ministry that he started up there. And so he went, and he's stayed up there to continue ministry up there, while others, the rest of us, kind of felt different callings to different things. So that ended up disbanding pretty soon after we moved down to Nashville. But those guys are still my brothers, and I see them all the time. Actually, you know Jonathan Mason, who's now Curb Word, all things Christian there. He's a big dog. We tell him I always like to joke with him. He hates what I say, but I'm like, he became a suit, you know. He's working in the industry now, but I see him every week. And then Joel Russo is the other guy. He's doing writing and producing down here. Nice. I just watched his cat last week. So they're my, so we don't play music together that much anymore, but we're all still in music. And it's actually, I think in some ways, allowed our friendships to really grow. And it's been really good. But yeah, moved down here. And man, it's been a roller coaster. That was in the fall of 2014. And it's been like, it's been a wild ride, and it's been so good. And I like telling these stories because it reminds me of God's faithfulness in my life and seeing kind of where he's brought me from. My life seems to have just been this steady trajectory of like, he always gives me not what I want, but what I need to grow and develop me. So I needed those years in New England of like, to cut my teeth, to learn what it was like to play live, to become a better drummer, to learn how to play with backing tracks, to get these things in lower pressure situations, if you want to say that, where we're just trying to figure it out. And I can see so clearly how it prepared me to moving to a town like Nashville, where it's quote unquote professional, you know, we're now in the industry level or whatever you want to call it. And from there, like kind of floated around for a little bit, but I ended up getting in touch with a singer-songwriter named Ginny Owens, who she's been around for a long time. I run into her, and she has her right-hand man, Kyle Buchanan. He plays acoustic guitar for her. And I end up going out on the road with them, playing percussion primarily, just like a cajon setup with all this stuff. And we tour around. It was like my first like Nashville touring kind of experience for a year. And those now, I mean, Kyle's my best friend. He's my dude. And Ginny is one of my closest friends ever too. I'm so thankful for them. But yeah, we did that for a year. And then Kyle, before even knowing Ginny, he had met a guy named Jordan Feliz who had just come to town. He was, he played in like a rock band out in California and then moved on, did a little worship project for a little bit. But he had just moved to Nashville and was trying to like write songs and sing. He had felt a calling to come here and was seeing what that was all about. And so while we're touring with Ginny, he's writing songs and everything and gets signed to a label called Centricity and releases this song called The River. And so Kyle's out with me. We're like doing our little, you know, worship nights with Ginny or whatever. And I'm hearing about this guy, Jordan, who's having success. I don't know him at all. I've never met him. But Kyle's like, yeah, Jordan is like, sounds like his songs are starting to do really well. And he might actually be looking to put together a band here pretty soon. And he told me like, I'd be his MD and build up this thing, like start to maybe put some wheels underneath this thing.
Wow.
And yeah, and sure enough, the river just blows up and it goes, I don't even know, like, I guess you can call it viral, but you know, it goes number one on Christian radio and all that stuff. And Kyle gets the call from him. He's like, dude, it's time. Like, I need a band. We're starting to get calls and they want me to come with a full band and everything. And he's like, are you in? Are you ready to do this thing? I want you to be my guy. He's talking to Kyle. He's like, I want you to be my guy who puts together the team. And he's like, I think we got everyone. We got you. Like, Kyle would play acoustic, and I got a guitar player. My best friend Joey's here. He's gonna play bass but also tour manage. He's like, the only person I don't have, he's like, we don't have a drummer, because his best friend David Nicaris, who I love, David Nicaris is a bomb drummer, by the way. He's in Nashville too. He played for Hawk Nelson. But nice. So he actually moved with Jordan, and they were like valeting cars together. But David got the gig with Hawk Nelson and ended up taking that and starting to tour with them. So Jordan's like, well, dang, like the one guy, like I thought I had a drummer, but you know, obviously he's got to take that opportunity. I don't have anything right now. So that left a little gap for me. And so he's like, do you know any drummers, Kyle? And Kyle's like, well, I've spent the last year of my life spending a lot of time with this dude, Andrew. I think he could crush it. And I met up with Kyle. I met up with Jordan for coffee and his manager. And to be honest, this is kind of hilarious, but for a year playing with Kyle, Kyle actually only saw me play drum set, like full kit, once an entire year, because we would just do the percussion thing. And so he put his neck out there for me. He really vouched for me. And I'm so thankful for that. But yeah, the hang was good. We did like the first gig I ever did. Well, the first, it wasn't a gig. I did a music video with Jordan, which is a fun little side story, really quick. On the first impression with Jordan, yeah. First thing I do with him is this music video for a song called Never Too Far Gone. It's in Nashville. It's at like this park downtown. And I'm not proud of this, but it's funny now looking back. But I just brought like a little drum setup, but it was like the most random stuff because it had to look cool. So I brought like a sample pad and like a kick drum and a snare. And as I'm like piecing together everything to bring and to throw in my car, I forgot my drum throne. Like I didn't bring a drum seat. And like, so I get to the shoot and I'm bringing everything. I mean, we have to like carry it into the park. It's like, and I realize I don't have my drum throne. And it's just like that moment of like, oh no. Like first impression.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dude forgets the thing he sits on. Like this is kind of important. And so in that video, the videographer just happened to have like an apple crate that he brought to like set some stuff on. So you can't, you can tell like in a couple shots, I think, but like I'm just sitting on an apple crate the entire time.
We'll link the video in the show
notes.
Oh
gosh. Yeah. I haven't seen that video. You can see a very young Andrew in that video. I feel like it's funny watching those videos of like, man, I was so young. And the things that, it's hilarious because that was my first thing. And little did I know, I would be spending the next 3.5 years of my life with those guys. Like,
wow.
I spent a lot of time with those guys, and they're brothers now, but it was, that was like day one. And then it was just rocket ship. We just started the first actual gig, like playing in front of people with Jordan, was the Caleb Fan Awards at the wow. Opry. So the first show we do is playing the river, one song, playing the river at the Opry right after Need to Breathe. And like, right. And it's, and those award shows, it's a cluster, man. Like, it's just like everything's moving so fast. And you're just like, you're just praying. You're like, you sit down on the drum set and you're like, I just, please, Lord, let there be click in my ears. Cause as right. long as there's click, I'll be all right. Like, I'm just going to muscle memory it. But like, it is,
wow,
intense. And we have I'm so thankful, but we have a picture of that show, my very first show. Someone grabbed it, and it's so cool seeing that, because I see that one, and then we just went off. We toured so much, so much. And it was just always one thing. That first summer, van and trailer, doing everything from little churches in the middle of nowhere to like massive festivals. And then first tour, we opened for King and Country, and then we're on the Rock and Worship Roadshow, and then Michael W. Smith, and then Matthew West, and then Winter Jam, and then some other tour, and then some other wow. tour, and then all of a sudden we're on Hits Deep. And it's just like, just keeps stair-stepping. And then, you know, all I can do is just look, I'm looking at having those moments of like, man, like, why am I here? Right. Like, what, why am I even like, how did I get here? How did I get here?
Wow.
And the Lord's good, but not because I've played cool shows. I'm thankful for those. But like, I wouldn't have been ready in any way for any of that had I not gone through years of playing for two people to playing for. At the end of the day, like, I still, and I like to say, I need to remind myself of this, but I believe with my whole heart, like, I have just as much joy playing to my church on Sunday. Like, I'm not playing to them, but serving at my church.
Yeah.
Where I'm down, like, at just down the road, like, it's a, I'm on the ground in the corner, no one can see me, to serving in that capacity to what we were doing, you know, with Jordan playing Angels Stadium, you know, with 20,000 people there. I mean, like, there's, it doesn't, I still have to like wrap my head around that opportunity that we had there, but like, it never really fazed me. I'm just so thankful for so many of the opportunities that I've had. And it's just been a wild ride, man. But at the end of the day, like, playing drums is the icing on the cake. It's like, yeah, it's so much fun. I love doing it. And but really, those 3.5 years were it's all about the people, and it's with those guys I spend my life with. And I'm thankful for each one of them and how I've grown as a person through it. And yeah, I mean, those guys in certain seasons, they saw me more than they saw their wives.
Yeah.
A lot more than they did. So you get to know them pretty well. And I've gotten the privilege of going to some pretty cool places and seeing some pretty cool things. So anyway, I'm going to take a breath.
Yeah, I have some questions. Yeah, I have some questions for you that just to break down a few things. Like, I went to Bible school just outside of Boston area.
Yeah.
And so I remember driving by Berkeley, never went inside, believe it or not. But for those of us kind of like me who always wonder, like, what's it like to attend Berkeley? Is there like, Is it all about competition on the inside of like, who's the better drummer? Like how's life on the inside of a college like that?
Life on the inside. I think like a prison or something. It's not Berkeley is awesome. Like it is an incredible school. And I'm so thankful I got to, I remember my first year before I even started sitting in a hallway, we're going to do our play. So you get in and then you have to do another like audition to see where you're going to be placed inside the school. And I'm sitting in the hallway and I'm seeing drummers with practice pads, like just snare practice pads, doing things I'd never even seen before. Right. And I'm like, why am I here? Like it was a severe doubt of like, how did I get in? And I feel like everyone goes through this if they go to college, especially college that's like, what do you call it? Like specified in something like music or any sort of arts. But when you're that age, especially like an 18-year-old, everyone goes through like an identity crisis at 18 going to college of like, you realize, and again, especially with a school like Berkeley, where everyone that's coming there was the best where they came from. So yeah. They were the best drummer. They were the best guitar player in their town or in their school or whatever. And then they all go to school together and they get together and they realize, oh, I'm not the best anymore. And like, yeah. I'm no longer like, and so everyone has to wrestle through that of like, well, what does it mean if I'm not the best anymore? Like what is, and you know, there's extremes of that in which you can go through severe depression of like, and if I'm not that I'm like a spiritual rock or anything, but if you don't have some sort of like spiritual compass to be like, to have your identity rooted in something else, it can really disorient you of like, what is my purpose? You know, what is my identity? And Berkeley was a huge thing for me in terms of my spiritual growth. And there's the Berkeley Christian Fellowship was a huge part of my life there because it created a space where we reminded each other every week that like our identity is not music. You know, music is not what defines you and is not what tells you that you are a worthwhile person of listening to or whatever. But that like, because we are images of God that walk this earth, people have value and your value is what God has told you it is. And like, and it's of infinite value. You are of infinite value, not just because of your ability, but just because of who you are. Yeah. And that was really healthy. Now, I should say one thing that I was able to deal with it, that helped me deal with it a lot more, was because I went for the recording thing. So when I got there and I started doing the recording program, it helped me be like, I saw those drummers and I was like, well, it's cool. Like I'm here to do the recording thing. So like, I don't need to be the best drummer. And thankfully with recording, like it's a pretty level playing field. No one before coming to Berkeley has a ton of access to like studios and stuff. So you're all kind of learning together on that stuff. Some people have ears for production and stuff, but I'm thankful for that because it helped me kind of navigate that that world. So because of the recording thing, my last 2 years at Berkeley, I barely played drums, to be honest. I played because I didn't have to take lessons. So I played at my church and I played in the Christian Fellowship and some random things, but like drumming became just, it was like back to kind of just, this is fun for me. I enjoy doing it, but I wasn't studying it necessarily. And, but yeah, I mean, so, but to go back to your original question, like Berkeley is an amazing school. And like you, if you learn early on or at some point learn like, okay, this isn't about being the best. And I feel like every student eventually gets that point. It's like, this isn't about being the best, but rather I get to be around some of the most phenomenal musicians and I get to learn from them. I get to play with them. And like, and you see it as an opportunity that way. The sooner you grasp that, the more amazing it is that you are just like, I don't know. Like, I remember just like some of my best friends are just like, they're crushing it today. And I'm just like, I'm still learning stuff every day from them. If and like, I'm so proud of them. And like, it what a blessing to be around that kind of community and that kind of culture. So, and then yes, like they got some great facilities. Like the studios at Berkeley are awesome. And the fact that you get to just work in them. What other like place do you get to like work on a recording project that we're like, hey, you need to produce an artist. This is your homework, like your project. Wow. Is you need to produce an artist. And like, you're in a school where there's just like, you're recording incredible musicians like all the time. Yeah. Like you just choose anyone and it's like, you're in pretty good shape. So yeah, we're definitely blessed that way. So I'm, Berkeley was dope. Berkeley was nice. Dope. And Boston is an amazing school to go to, city to go to school in. It's just a really cool town.
But. Yeah, it's beautiful. One of my favorite cities. If I would ever move to the US, now that I've been to Nashville, I think Nashville is like my number one choice. Yeah. I think just because of all the drummer friends now that I have. But Boston would be probably my favorite
place. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So one last curious question out of Berkeley. Any like successful, popular drummers like that were there when you were there that are now like mainstream drummers?
This is my opportunity to name drop, right? No, I don't know. The hilarious thing is, to be completely honest with you, John, like I was a pretty under the radar guy. Like, and it makes me, again, I just have this deep gratitude of, I look back, like I was not a big deal at Berkeley. No one knew who I was. And like, yet somehow I have had a career in music and like a very fruitful career. And like, I remember looking at some students and being like, yo, these people are going to like blow this. Like they're just on the next level. They're going to have so much success. I'm not saying they haven't, they probably have, but it's interesting. A lot of students are so high level that I'm kind of speaking, I don't want to speak for them, but like they're in that level of music, which is a little more like specific to yeah. like, so a great example is Matt Garska was there when I was there. He's a phenomenal drummer. He plays for like Animals as Leaders. I don't know if you've heard of them. Yeah. We're talking like Prague, intense Prague rock and metal and stuff that I still don't understand, like how he does it, like on like, but it's so specific and it's like he finds great joy in doing it. And like, but it's not like the general public doesn't listen to that. And you get a lot of that, of like people that are so high level that they you know, just going out and playing 2 and 4 and stuff is not, it doesn't bring them as much joy. And a lot of them will do it and love doing it and are great at doing it. But so in terms of, I mean, I should know more people. I really should. But I can't drop a ton of names, honestly. No, Matt is the one that I think of because, and I'm not even like good friends with him. He wouldn't remember me. But I remember seeing him like in the practice rooms of being like, he's just shedding and I'm just like next level stuff. I mean, my buddy Ben Marino, he probably, I don't know if he listens to this podcast. I should name drop him. My buddy Ben Marino. He's out in
Ben.
Ben Marino?
NYC?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
You talked to him before?
I think DM'd on Instagram every now and then, but yeah, I'm as a pastor, like I make those connections. Mm-hmm. And then I remember them somehow, but yeah, Ben Marino. I know
Ben Marino is the dude. I love him. He he is a fantastic drummer, and so he's involved in Hillsong. I know he's doing a whole bunch of like recording stuff for them nowadays. But like, fun fact with Ben, I didn't learn about this until years later, but the gig in which I met that worship band out in New England, the one that got everything started. A good friend at Berkeley, he asked like some of his friends, he's like, hey, we're going to do like a worship night as a fundraiser. We're like, we're going to sell tickets and then we're going to do a fundraiser for my sister's missions trip. So like, we're going to raise money for it by doing this like concert slash worship night thing. And so he asked me and some of my other buddies. And so we went out to the suburbs and we played at a church as a venue. And that church, the worship leader was this guy, Andy Needham, who had the band that I was in. Like, so that's how I met Andy, was because of this one show. So he asked me to do that show. I later learned years later that I was not the first call for that show. Ben was. Ben got asked to do it first and he couldn't do it, which is why Ian X asked me to do it afterwards. And I didn't learn that until so much later. I was like, Ben should have been your first call. He's awesome. Like, he would have,
right.
Like, he, yeah, yeah. I love Ben so much. I miss him. I don't get to see him. I think last time I saw him was on the tour we did up there. We hung out afterwards, but
nice.
Yeah, that's great, man. Good times. Nostalgia coming back to me now.
Heck yes. Okay, I have another question, which I just want to pick your brain from, just because in case there are some drummers listening that are on a similar path, where they're pursuing maybe a future full-time in music. You mentioned that you had met up with Jordan Feliz and his manager when they were looking for a drummer. So when you're walking into a meeting like that, even if it's over coffee, like what are you trying to portray about yourself? Because I'm sure you want to appear confident, but not cocky.
Yeah.
And so I'm just curious as to like what was going through your mind while you're driving to that coffee shop, you know, like just your mindset, your mind frame. Is it to impress or is it just to like introduce yourself? Yeah, I'm curious to know.
Yeah, that's a very unique situation in that like that has not really happened again for me, in that I have to actually think back in my memory of like how I was feeling in that moment, because there's a lot of factors that kind of go into it. One is that like I had more or less already been offered it. This was more of like a, like, we want to meet Andrew to make sure he's not a jerk, or like to make sure that he's like, just to get a vibe for him of like as a person. That's why it was coffee. Yeah. It was like, and my audition, quote unquote, I never auditioned. My audition was my first couple gigs. And it's like, if I knew if I blew it, like, we would have a different conversation, but like things were moving so fast.
Like forget a drum throne? No.
Yeah, seriously. I'm telling you, man. But like, this is where now every artist is different. Everyone's looking for something different. But I feel like most artists understand, especially I would like to think in the CCM world, the contemporary Christian world, that like the personality and the, you know, they call it the quote unquote, the hang, is what, I mean, again, when I think to my years with Jordan, like, although drumming was what I was paid to do, like that was my job and I needed to crush that. If you add up the hours, 99% of it was traveling with those guys and being around them. And so like, I like to encourage drummers that come to town or just musicians in general, you can't really teach this necessarily, especially in Nashville. Like if you want to have work or if you want to have an opportunity, like the playing thing, like the ability is almost just a given. Like everyone's pretty good here. Like everyone's like, and you don't need to be the best. You really don't. Like if you try to be the best, you're going to probably go crazy. But like the two factors you really need to have is you need to have a work ethic, of just a strong work ethic of that, like, this is my job. I'm going to work hard to like get better at it and do that. And then this other one kind of sums up a bunch, but I call it like you need to have self-awareness, but that goes with just like self-awareness. I feel like combines communication skills, the ability to read people or hangs or whatever. Yeah. The ability to have healthy relationships, it all feeds into like self-awareness of like, you need to know that like, you're going to play with people that everyone's different and has different personalities, and you need to be able to gel and find your place of like how you interact with people. And if you have good self-awareness, you can learn how to flourish in a lot of situations of like, oh, this person tends to is much more like analytical, and this person's like, so like, I think that stuff kind of comes naturally to me, but having those two things of like, I'm here to work and also to be just to be a good friend to these people will get you way farther than your ability in this town, because we're not playing the most technical music in the world. And the people that are showing up to concerts, some of, you know, there are people that want to hear those musical moments and will really appreciate that stuff. But people want to hear the songs. They want to be encouraged. They want to worship. They want to be drawn into something. And we're there to stay out of the way and just help the songs come across.
Yeah.
At least that's what, you know, the way I've kind of seen it. So going back, I always like dance around your question and then kind of circle back. Like going into that meeting, I don't think I was thinking through all that. That's all right. Kind of hindsight. Because again, this is my first, I'm young. This is my first time ever doing this. I was probably super nervous. But I think having a strong faith backbone goes into this is like, I do this all the time now. I had a meeting this morning with someone, and I just spend a second in my car before I go into something being like, Lord, the Lord is sovereign. He's led me to this point in my life. Like he's opened and closed the doors that need to be closed. He's given me what I needed and not always what I wanted. And so when I get to those big crossroads, I'm able to just kind of exhale and be like, Lord, when I walk in there, you will do what needs to happen. If I blow this, I trust that you are still good and that I needed to blow that, you know, so that like, right. if I don't get this opportunity, you know, maybe there's something I really need to learn from it. Maybe I'm not ready for it. Maybe there's another guy that it's his time for this, that you are preparing for him. And I just try to go into this with a sense of freedom of like, I'm free to kind of fail or whatever. I'm going to go in and I'm just going to try to do the best job, but I'm going to be honest with them. I'm going to try to be real and just try to love him, whatever way that looks. And I'm going to probably try to talk about myself in good ways, but I'm also just going to be honest with him. I don't want to be someone I'm not. And
that's good.
And whatever that comes across as, you know, in terms of when that meeting was open, there was a very finite way to approach it. And it was just like, I'm here right now for this meeting. I'm just going to be myself and see what happens. And the fact that I even have that meeting doesn't make sense, you know, right. So like, so whatever. Was I excited? Did I want to do it? Yes. Like I was really nervous. I really wanted that opportunity, but like, you know, at a certain point you just got to let it go and everything. And like, I gained a really good friend that day, both of them, Jordan and his manager, Adam, I love Adam too so much. Like these guys, they're my brothers, you know. They've provided for me in ways that I'm so thankful for. So, yeah. So, I think it is good to like think through like what they might ask you. But at the end of the day, you walk into those meetings and you be yourself and you try to just to love them in that way. Especially a coffee meeting, like don't try to like blow up your resume. Like, man, they know if you got coffee with them, they probably know what you've done already. They probably looked at your Instagram or whatever. Like, you don't need to impress anyone. Like, and that just be, they want to know, like, how are you as a person? And like, are they going to want to spend 12 hours in a van with you, you know, before you play a show? Or are you going to drive them nuts? You'd be surprised, man. You can meet, and obviously I'm not going to name names, but like, I do meet people every now and again, nothing against them, but like within 5 minutes, I'm like, I know I cannot spend 8 hours in a van with you. I'm glad to have coffee with you. I'll spend an hour with you. We'll talk. We can text, man. I'm all here for you. Love you. But like, we ain't gonna go on the road together. and I'm a pretty easygoing guy for the most part, but like, and that's hard stuff. You can't really teach that. That's like stuff people gotta like kind of wrestle through on their own with like personal things. But anyway,
or they can listen to this podcast and be like, okay, I gotta improve on that. Okay, so this is a random question that I have for you. And if my memory serves me right, I think I remember watching a video of you playing. And I think it was a Hillsong Young and Free song. And you were doing the lead synth part with an SPDSX.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Dun, dun, right? Dun, 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 dun. It was alive. Dun.
Yeah.
And it's like a, what do they call that? An ostinato or something.
Right. So you did that for like the synth lead part with one hand while you're still keeping beat with the other.
To be,
why?
That's a throw.
It was like intense. I'm like, this guy's crazy.
That's a throwback right there, man. Well, I'll tell you one thing. Boredom can lead to a lot of great things sometimes. And when you're in a, when you've played the same song a million times, and when you live in, again, I was like a young 22-year-old in New England, we're playing camp, so we're sitting there for 5 days in the woods, and you just start to you want to challenge yourselves in certain ways. And so when Alive, that was when like Alive was like newer, and I had gotten one of those sample pads that was like the original SPD. It was called like a, wasn't the SX, but you can look it up. We're at a camp in that video. And
well, I'm gonna post the link.
Oh gosh. Y'all go easy on me, okay? Sure. But I think we were just getting started with backing tracks, and in the early days we only led a couple of original tunes, you know, every time we would lead. And so backing tracks are starting to grow in popularity, but because we did specific arrangements, I would create the backing tracks for most of the songs that we did. I would just create them in, at that time it was like Reason, and and they were super simple. I remember the very first backing track I ever made was that Newsboys song, He Reigns.
Yeah.
And it's like just like a shaker and some like mallets or something. I don't know. But so I would create the backing tracks, and as I would listen through, I'd be like, all right, what can we play and what can't we play? And so when we did Alive, I remember listening and just being like, that's a lead line. It's been, like, that's a focal point of the song. And as a musician, I don't know, maybe it's like the Berkeley in me or something. I don't know. I have a really hard time putting something that's so focal in a backing track. Like, right. I have a hard time being like, this is kind of a main thing, and it's just like in the track, like not being performed. It feels a little bit like a cop out or something, or like, so that was just me being like, the song's like Four on the Floor, and it's like, you can play Four on the Floor with one hand, you know? And so I was like, so for me, and I also like the nerdiness in me, likes the independent stuff. Like, I'm still
right.
Just the other week I looked up on Drumeo, the polyrhythms of Tool, and I'm just like learning how to like, I like the how it messes with your mind of like trying to line things up. So yeah, I just sat for a while and I was like, okay, like this is pretty easy to do with one hand, the dun 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 dun. So all I have to do is figure out where are the downbeats, because that's where my kick is going, and then where's my snare. And so like, and from there it's just practice. And like, let's be honest, like camps in the middle of New Hampshire are pretty low pressure situation to kind of work through that stuff.
Yeah.
And and once you practice it, it just becomes muscle memory. So yeah, I wanted to actually have a performance aspect of it. So whether or not those kids, no one cares. Like, they don't see it. They're just happy to like dance around or whatever. But it was like a personal challenge for myself to do it. And I think that's why I made a video of it, was I was like, well, at least maybe someone will appreciate this.
Yeah,
and I threw it up there. And yeah, it's had like a good amount of views. It's a good amount of views. So
nice.
It was a fun, and I even had a foot switch that it would going into the chorus. I press a switch, and it would change to the big sounds for the chorus.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So like I would go to the toms, I'd dun 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 dun, like a little build, and I would really quickly hit the switch to go to the larger sounds. And yeah, and doing the little scuts, scuts with one hand. It's just a fun challenge. I don't know. I haven't done that. I should see if I can still do that. Probably not. It would probably come back to me after a few tries. I still, to this day, I have my SPD-XX, and I still have those samples saved on like a patch. Wow. And so every once in a while, I'll like pull them up when we were doing like sound check or something. Yeah.
That's cool, man.
That brings me back.
let's get into this a bit. So at the very beginning, we talked about the fact that you're doing work with Loop Community. I love what you just said, because it tells me you're not afraid of technology. You've had, you know, you were, I don't want to say dabbling, because that sounds like I'm minimizing what you were doing, but
Minimize me, man.
No way. Right. But you were getting your feet wet with the band and getting into, you know, multi-tracks or at least tracks and playing along with that stuff. So kind of just bring us up to speed on your journey. Like, how did you end up connecting with Loop Community? I know you talked about being raised in Chicago. I know they're based out of there, but and then your role today and even the product you helped develop.
Yeah. So I was doing those back. I would create those backing tracks, just because we needed them. Like, that's why I was making them, and I had time. Again, I was just like, I have these skills. Why not spend some time doing it? So I had built up a pretty good base of songs that I had backing tracks for, and I think it was actually the leader of the band, Andy Needham, was the one that he. I don't know how he found out about them, but heard about Loop Community and was like, he sent it to me and he was like, hey, like, you should check these guys out because you could actually probably sell some of these backing tracks to people, like to other worship leaders. I was like, interesting. I look at it and this was, you know, in their earlier days. And sure enough, you could sign up as like, I don't know if they were called producers, may have been contributors or whatever, but you could sell your backing tracks to people. They would license them and they would take care of all the legal stuff, you know, to make sure it was make sure people get theirs. And so it was like a no brainer. It was like, I already have these. All I have to do is like package them up and I could start selling them. So, that was my first introduction to Loop Community, was uploading my first. And if you want, you can go look them up. I think He Reigns is literally still on there. It's kind of funny. You can see, I don't even remember what the last, I haven't actually submitted a song in a while, but my most recent one compared to my very first one is hilarious. I like it. It reminds me of the growth, you know, as a human.
Yeah.
But so I learned about, I didn't actually know that they were from Chicago until later. And, but yeah, I had some pretty good success as a contributor. And I think, so Matt McCoy is the founder of Loop Community, and my tracks did pretty well. And so I don't, in those early days, I may have been more of a top producer in those days. And so that kind of opened the door with Matt, that when one time when I went home for like Christmas or something, I just reached out to him and grabbed a coffee at Starbucks and just connected, talked about tracks. That's a funny time to think about. Like, I know Matt really well now. I work with him, but like he wasn't married yet. He had just created this thing and it was starting to really blow up, or he's starting to get traction. And so that's how that relationship started, just over coffee. And then I kept creating tracks, but when I moved to Nashville and stopped doing the worship band thing, I stopped creating tracks as much as I used to. I created one here and there for songs just to keep me sharp, but I always stayed in touch. I was always connected with Matt and would meet up every once in a while. He came out to like a show every here and there. But Loop Community was growing, and they started to, they created their first, actual hardware product, which was this pedal called the Looptimus pedal. And Matt developed that, and it's for triggering tracks. You can do a whole bunch of stuff. It's a MIDI foot controller. And he got me started with one of those with like the worship band and start using with other artists I was playing with. And yeah, but backing tracks just ended up becoming part of my life with everything that I was in. So like it started with me creating them in that worship band. But then when I moved to Nashville and I played for Ginny, we would use backing tracks for that. Not ones I've created, but from her album. And then with Jordan, that was, I should mention this. I don't know if it was really that focal of a point, but like, I'll tell you one thing, that if you want to have a leg up in the industry or whatever down here, is like, know a thing or two about backing tracks and know how to trigger them, know how to do, to have a setup, because it is a, that is a very, a skill that will get you work, because pretty much every artist that I played for asks, like, do you know how to run backing tracks? Do you know how to do that or whatever? And sometimes it's kind of assumed that the drummer will know how to do that. There have been artists where like I've gone so deep and then they're like, you're cool with doing backing tracks, right? And I was like, what if I told them I didn't know? Like they'd be in a lot of trouble. But thankfully, yeah, I have all the gear and stuff to do it. So with Jordan, that was part of it, is like, can you do backing tracks? And for my entire time with Jordan, I was the track guy. I triggered tracks. I didn't create all the tracks. Kyle did almost all of that. He would like do the arrangements and stuff, but I was manning the system back there. And so it was always just a part of my life. And yeah, and I'll see if I can sum up this story really quick, but I do think it's a really cool story of how this idea of what is now Track Rig came into being. It was my first year with Jordan. It was a New Year's run. We were doing some shows that was leading up to Liberty Does Winterfest, I think it's called. We were going to Winterfest. And so we had like three shows that were bringing us there. And we had this filler show that there's nothing wrong with this, but it was like a very small church in the middle of nowhere, North Carolina. And it's kind of like help us get from point A to point B type deal. I should look up these guys. I have a picture of them somewhere. I should know their names. I'm so sorry. But the worship leader had a worship band up for that church, and they played some songs before we went on. And I remember having a conversation with them afterwards, and this would happen all the time at churches and everything. The worship leader comes up to me and talks to me about tracks. They're like, hey, what do you got going on here? We've always thought about doing this. Didn't know how to get started. Didn't know what kind of gear we need, what program, all this stuff. And I'm happy to talk to people about that all the time. But he comes up to me, this one worship leader. He's like, dude, he's like, I see that you're running like Ableton and you got this whole track set up. He's like, man, I need to get us started on this. He's like, I know it's something we need to do, but like, I just don't know how to take the leap. Like, I know it would increase our how tight we are, and it would like fill out our sound. He's like, I just don't know like how to use any of this stuff. So I give him my number, which may or may not have been a good idea, but like in the end it was a good idea. But like, it's because he starts texting me and asking me questions about like how to get started. And I learned very quickly that he has no background in audio technology or anything. And so he's never used an interface. And so he asked me like, what interface should I get? I'm like, you should check out this. I think it was like the PreSonus Firebox or something, or whatever it was called at the time. And I was like, you should get this. It's a great value for the money. You'll get 8 outputs, like it's probably your best deal. And he gets back to me and he's just like, he's like, what's with all like, what are these microphone inputs for in these, like, what are these like preamps and stuff? And then it dawns on me, and like, well, dude, actually, you can put some gaff tape over the entire front of this thing. Like, you don't need to touch anything. Like, you're not using any of the inputs or anything on the front. You're using this thing only for the outputs. And that was kind of like this moment where I was like, huh. Like, there isn't to my knowledge at that time, I was like, there doesn't seem to be an interface out there that is designed. This was before. Now, I'd have to look back. The Play Audio by iConnectivity was either just coming out or it had not come out yet. I wasn't aware of it yet. But I was like, there doesn't seem to be an interface on the market that is designed only for backing track playback. Like, just that, and there definitely wasn't one that was plug and play. Because, right. Like, on top of that, I was like, he's going to get this Firebox, and then he has to download Universal Control, which is the software that comes with it, and that's going to look like Chinese to him. Like, he doesn't, like, I'm going to have to walk through that with him. It's simple for me, but, like, so I'm like, man, how does this not exist? Like, this plug and play, like, it's so, and even with Jordan, we got this interface. We were using a Motu at the time, and there's a company down here. It's a great company. Awesome company called OCD Cases, and you pay them to take a really expensive interface like a Motu, and they put it in the box, and then they seal off the front of it, and then they make little lines that come from the quarter inch outputs to XLR outputs on the back of the case. So basically, they like seal off everything so that it's just XLR to your snake, and you have a fully functioning interface in there. It feels kind of like a waste a little bit of just like you bought this, you know, $800 thing that you're not, I mean, those interfaces cost so much, mostly because of like their preamps and stuff and their microphone inputs. So it seems like kind of backwards. So anyway, that's how the idea like came in. I was like, someone has to make something like this. So we had a good amount of free time in January and February, and I just started tinkering around with this idea and taught myself how to do a little CAD drawing program and drew up some of these, like, yeah, I can show them. I'll send them to you. These like initial blueprints for this thing that would become Track Rig. And so I had this idea sitting there. I was like, okay, like, what do I do with this now? Like, what, how do you build this? I don't even know. Like, and, I learned very quickly that, to have an idea, I say this a lot nowadays, but like everyone has ideas. Ideas are a dime a dozen. The difference between having an idea and making an idea reality is night and day. They're two different things. Like, and I learned that it would cost way more money than I had to like develop this and way more connections than I had and like all this. So I'm brainstorming and I'm like, do I talk to like Presonus? Like, I don't even know anyone at Presonus. And that's when the idea of talking to Matt McCoy, I don't remember exactly when it came up, but like it just was like this light bulb moment of like, these guys get it. Like, this is what Loop Community is built on, is making backing track playback as easy as possible and as simple as possible for the layperson, for the person trying to, that's a volunteer. Like, we want to help people lead music as easy as possible and like without technology being a barrier. That's why Looptimus was designed. That's why they have the community of producers and the resource and devs. I was like, oh my gosh, this would be so perfect for their customers and for their worship leaders and stuff. And so I shoot Matt an email. I was like, I got this crazy idea. And I think he got back to me like that. He was like, dude, we have thought about doing something like this for a while. And he's like, this looks like this, they got it. Like with any other company, I felt like I had to convince them of like, and Matt was like, nope, this needs to happen. Like, this is like worship leaders need this specifically in the church, like something like this. And man, that was, again, it was just off to the races. And I'm glad I didn't know at the time how stressful it would be, but like I grew a lot as a person in that time. Matt said this pretty early on and it was really wise. He's like, just so you know, cause he had done the Looptimus already, the pedal. Yeah. He warned me. He's like, dude, product development is not for the faint of heart. Like, it is not easy. Mm-hmm. And, man, I went through when we launched the product, like some of the most, I'd never been someone to really struggle with anxiety, but when we launched that product, like I got some heavy doses of it. And like, and it's been an incredible journey, but like, But Loop Community, we got to partner, and they're the ones that, like, they took it, and Matt and the team just we were able to make it a reality and to get this product built. Sorry, one second, I'm running out of power here. But we were able to get this thing built, and get this actual physical piece of hardware, and get it implemented into our ecosystem. And it's been a journey, but now we have something that we're really proud of, and that we are now seeing the response from worship leaders as we're actually, like, serving churches and helping them get going. And I have conversations almost, you know, every other day with, whether through email, with worship leaders where Trackery is being used to help them simplify. I'm about to get one to my parents in Chicago. Like, my mom, nice. If my mom can run backing tracks, shout out to my mom. But if my mom is using backing tracks, y'all, we have, like, we've made it simple enough. You know? 'Cause, like, she just texted me. She's like, we want to get a track rig for Pathways, their church. I was like, that made me feel good. Like, I'm helping, helping my mom get served with tracks. So she's got, but that's the whole ecosystem of Loop Community is, like, with Prime, their playback app. It's like, how can we make it easy for people where technology is not the stumbling block, that you can focus on just leading. And so worship leaders and the church has always been a focal point, the foundation of what Loop Community is built on. And we try to stay true to that and all the decisions that we make. So, but through that process, I got to, you know, join the Loop Community team. And I feel very fortunate for that. There's some awesome guys working there. And it's a lot of fun to see where it's come from, and we reflect on it a lot. But yeah, so it was a journey. About a year later, we actually had a physical product, and it's now out there in the wild. And it's not just, obviously, it's been really cool to get artists on it now too, because, like, no more DIs, no more, you know, just the reliability of just having this super simple thing that was built for playback, has been a really cool thing to see, kind of expand and blow up. So,
yeah, I want to add to that. And I told you this when we connected, I think it was last week on the phone, that, as our church here in Toronto, like, for 2020 budget, we budgeted for a track rig.
So
and,
cool.
And 'cause we had this exact conversation, like, we're too novice, so to speak, to use Ableton full-fledged. Mm-hmm. Like we don't have a paid staff in our worship department who's going to look after all that stuff. So, so we use Prime already.
Yeah.
And our sound techs now are saying, our sound engineer, they're like, well, could we get, like, you know, isolated channels of guitars? 'Cause sometimes the guitars are just too loud compared to something else. And so when we're using Prime, then it's like, you know, our drummer has to lower the guitars for the sound guy.
Right.
So we're just like, you know what, this year, let's just budget for it. We'll get the track rig. So it's already been on our radar. Yeah. And then you reached out to me, and I'm just so fortunate for the opportunity just to connect and hear the heart behind how it all got started and came about. 'Cause, you know, when you think about companies and music, you know, that make technological products, what the heck, you know, like technology for music,
I got you.
You know, you think, well, obviously they're doing it 'cause there's a need, but there's also the idea of profit, right? Mm-hmm. But I love that what you guys are doing is you're, like, yes, you'll make money, but the heart of the product is not money. It's filling the need in the church, which to me is awesome, and it's needed. So
yep.
I'm excited. I know that there's one in the mail by the time I get home, either today or tomorrow, it's going to arrive, and I'm stoked to get my hands on it. And we're going to do an unboxing video and all of that fun stuff. We're going to put it through the ringer. And Andrew, why don't you tell our Worship Drummer family what you guys are doing in terms of a discount code and things like that?
Yeah. We love helping worship leaders. I love helping drummers anyway I can. And so we got a discount code for 10% off your first order. It can be anything on Loop Community. So if you want to get yourself a Loop to Miss pedal, we also make a Loop to Miss Mini, which are great pedals for triggering tracks if you're already doing that. They're nice, like solidly built foot controllers. So you don't have to be trying to press a space bar while you're playing drums, which is really, it's kind of hilarious sometimes to think about. The guy who's doing the most physical work, like flailing around, I remember that, like you finish a really high energy song and then I'm reaching over and my hand's like shaking because of the adrenaline and I have to press like one or something on the keyboard. And it's like, if I don't hit the right one, it's not going to be good. So anyway, so if you need to get a foot controller or if you want to get a track rig, you can use the code Worship Drummer. It's all caps, Worship Drummer, and that'll get you 10% off. I don't know when this is going to air, but that will be good for 1 month once this hits your listeners. So if you're listening to this and the podcast is just released, the code will be good for 1 month from today. And you can even find yourself some backing tracks to play along to or whatever you want. We're just stoked to have a little bit of a platform. So
yeah. And very grateful for Loop Community's generosity too for this.
Oh man, it's the beauty of my job and all of our jobs at Loop. It's like stuff like this is just such a win-win. Like it's it sometimes feels a little selfish that I get to do a lot of the things that I get to do, which is like helping people do their jobs better. Is one of the most, like, we have like a Facebook group for Loop Community members, and seeing like the community and helping people do their jobs or to serve their church is, it just feels very, it's a very fulfilling thing. And it's a big blessing. And that's what we're here for. Yeah. And you know, there is that tension of like, we are a company and we're trying to grow and like do all these things. But like, we've learned that like, first and foremost, we're here to serve the community and here to help worship leaders. And we have a heart for, I sometimes can easily get caught up in like the artist world of like arenas and all that stuff. But the reality is, man, it's like, there are thousands of worship leaders that are trying to be faithful in their, whatever context God has put them in, you know, churches of 50, you know, it doesn't matter what the size is, but they're trying to be faithful and shepherd those people. And that's like, that's the church, man. Like you forget about that, that like there is like a worship culture out there right now. And there's a lot of, it's very easy to see huge crowds gathered in arenas, which is great. That's awesome. It really is. But like, we got to remember that like the big C is made up of little C's, you know?
Yeah.
For that's sure, a tweet, man. Right there or something. But so anyway, that's our heart, you know, and it gets us stoked to help people out in any situation like that. So
love it, man. Hey, as we wrap up this conversation, what's one word of encouragement you want to leave for worship drummers who are listening to this?
Ooh. I wish I had thought about this ahead of time. Well, you know what? I can say this is I do get asked a good amount. There'll be a lot of younger guys that move to town and to Nashville. And for the most part, I'll get coffee with you if you want, if you move. I shouldn't throw that out there too much. Like I can only do so much, but like the common, you know, I one of the most common questions I get is like, how do I do what you do? You know, I've gotten to play with some amazing artists with Jordan, get to do these experiences that are so incredible. And I would have never, they weren't even on my radar, like when I was in college. And I now play with a guy named Micah Tyler, who's another contemporary Christian artist, and like, who's just an incredible person. And And I always get asked, like, so how do I do that? Like, what do I do to do that? Mm. And it's a really hard question because I can't there. If I'm just honest, there's nothing that I did necessarily that was like, well, if you just do this, 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 you will get this opportunity. It's just not the way our industry. And honestly, I just don't think it's the way the world works. But the Lord has, for some reason, given me these opportunities. And when the opportunity arose, I was prepared for it. Yeah. And I could not have played for Jordan Feliz if I had moved straight to Nashville from Berkeley. I would not have gotten the gig. I would not have been ready for it. I would have now spent 3 years touring in a van, like knowing what hard work looks like, so that I could go out with Jordan. And that first summer was a grind. Like we had a blast, but like there were a lot of terrible shows, a lot of great shows, but like you have to have appreciation. I'm just like brimming with like, I get to do this. And like, I wouldn't have been there if I hadn't done the worship band thing first. So I think my biggest piece of advice, and whether you call yourself a believer or a Christ follower or not, I think we as Christ followers have a should have a deeper appreciation or understanding of this thing. And which is just to be faithful with where you're at. Like, the comparison trap, the Instagram stuff is just, it's a dangerous thing. It really is. And like, I'm pretty thankful that Instagram was not huge when I first got started, because I was pretty blissfully unaware of it. My first Instagram post was like, I think a year into my career or something. So like, you can so easily just get caught up in like, this is what success looks like, and this is what I need to be doing. And it's just a lie. And that's a lie. Like, the Lord will lead you where you need to be. So pursue Him, be faithful, read your Bible, pray. Like, and whatever He has given you today, like whatever the job, the gig, whatever it is today, do that to the best of your ability. Love the people around you, and let tomorrow worry about self. You know, he'll be faithful, and he'll bring you where you need to be. And to be honest, that might mean you're not going to play in front of arenas, you know. And you know what, that's okay. Like, that's, it might be a really good thing that you don't. And like, it might be because you're going to have a much more fruit in your life doing something else. And John, I'll leave with this. Like, I do feel, maybe it's the Spirit speaking to me, like, I do want to be honest. Like, I don't play for Jordan anymore right now. And I play for Micah, and I deal with this a lot. Like, again, it's a little bit the Instagram culture. Like, right now I'm in a season where I'm not playing as much as I used to play. Like, when I was out with Jordan, it's like, I knew my calendar for a year, and like, we're doing like cruises, and then we're doing like massive festivals, headlining and stuff. And it looks really cool, and it looks all like that. And you know what? A year later, here I am sitting in my house, and I don't know. My next gig isn't for a month. And it's easy to think, I can easily think that, like, man, I feel kind of like a failure. And I feel kind of like I'm not, like, I spent 3 years of my life doing this thing, and that looks like I just went back 3 years in my career. Right. And I'm, like, right back where I started, square one. And the Lord's just been teaching me, man, that, like, that's a lie. Like, it's a really deep lie. And it's Him rooting out this pride in me that thinks that I had more value when I was doing something that looked this way. And He's teaching me what it really looks like to be faithful in the day to day. And now, because I'm home way more often in Nashville, I didn't realize how little I had developed my community here. And that now, like, I'm able to spend time in my church and just get in the lives of my friends and be there for them. And to be honest, I wasn't able to do that when I was touring super heavily. And that's not super healthy. Like, you need to have really deep relationships with people that know you. And you can do that sometimes with your band members, but your band members also have their own lives and everything that they, so I've been able to invest in this community here and to be a part of my church. And we're about to plant another church here in Nashville. And it's like, exciting. And I feel I feel a little more alive than I have in some ways, although I don't get to play live as much as I used to. Getting to serve my church in this way has reminded me, like, wow, the Lord has work for me to do today, and it doesn't look like it used to a year ago. But I'm going to try to be faithful. And yeah, I can get on Instagram and see all my buddies are out there living the dream and doing all this stuff. But it's like, the things I'm doing today have just as much value as they did a year ago. And the Lord is growing and maturing me through it. And man, that's what life's about. It's about growing and maturing and developing in those ways. Sorry, that was a lot. I'm just like, it's stuff that I'm thinking through a lot nowadays. And I think it's really important to remember. So be faithful where you are. Love the people around you. Serve your church. Don't get caught up in the like, that is not what worship is not about us, and it's not about our platforms, but it's about serving people. And I deal with that and wrestle with that tension every day, that we live in a culture that we want to put stuff out on the internet that looks a certain way, and but when in reality it's about the people directly in contact with us.
Well, that was my conversation back in February with Andrew Pica, and hope that you received the encouragement from this episode, as well as the wisdom that he shared. You know, so one thing that really stuck out to me is he said two factors you need to be the best is, number one, a strong work ethic. And he said, work hard and get better at it. And then number two is you need to have self-awareness. And he talked about what that means, such as communication skills, to be able to read people, and the ability to have healthy relationships. And more than being the best drummer, I think those are some of the things that would help you stand out. You know, just be a good friend to the people that you're supposed to be with. Some exciting things about this episode is that we legit have some of the CAD drawings that Andrew made for the original conception of Track Rig. And so we're going to have that in the show notes, and you could find that at worshipdrummer.com/031. That's for episode 31. And as well, I'm going to link the YouTube video where he's playing the lead part to Hillsong Young and Free's song Alive. And you know, that part. And it's really cool. He's playing it with his right hand and keeping the whole beat or groove of the song with his left. I thought that was pretty intense. And we're also going to put the link to the video where he forgot his drum throne with Jordan Feliz. I thought that was pretty funny. Although you can't really tell in the video, but I'll put it there anyways. You guys be the judge and you let me know. Again, you could catch the show notes at worshipdrummer.com/031. Listen, that's all for this episode of the Worship Drummer podcast. Thanks for your patience. Listen, I hope you're doing okay. And you know what? Better than okay. I hope you're doing well. And just shoot me a DM on Instagram at Worship Drummer. Let me know how you're doing. Let me know that you listened to the episode. And if you have any other people you want to see on the podcast, we're going to start gearing things up again. And let me know who you'd love to see on the podcast as well. Or if you prefer email and that's your thing, shoot me an email, John@worshipdrummer.com. That's John with no H, @worshipdrummer.com. Hey, listen, that's it for this episode. I'm John Manna. This is the Worship Drummer podcast. And as always, remember, put the heart before beat.